early in the morning, rise into the street, light me up that cigarette, and I'll strap shoes on my feet. Got to find a reason, reason things went wrong. Got to find a reason why my money's all gone. I got a Dalmatian, I can still get high.
Hello, 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 ladies and gentlemen, welcome you all to Drive Through HR, the number one internet daily radio show for the HR professionals. So this is your host, my name is Nisha, and I'm on Twitter at the HR Buddy. And if you're listening to Drive Through HR, give us a shout out on Twitter with the hashtag DTHR. So we will be able to pull that up. And as you all know, this month at Drive Through HR, we're going to broadcast stories of failures and successes, and unlike our regular shows, this is going to be a 45-minute show. So hang in there. And, well, as you all can agree, you know, we don't normally speak about or speak of failure very often at work or be it personal life or on social media. We don't make it public, right? But it is from failure that learning and innovation arise. As we all can agree with that. So without further ado, we have a wonderful guest who have joined with us right now to talk more about, you know, his stories about entrepreneurship, how did he kick off his company, and how did he become a leader, and more about college recruiting as well. So tune in. Let me welcome Jason Weingarten. Jason, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you here with us, Jason. So why don't you kick off the show by telling our audience who you are and what you do?
Sure. So I am Jason Weingarten. I am the co-founder and CEO of Yellow. We, as Yellow, we provide software and solutions primarily to enterprises. We had been known previously as Rexlu, where we had focused on college recruiting, the software that's needed for logistics and events, mobile apps to collect information for candidates. And recently we did a rebrand because many of our Fortune 500 companies started to use what I would consider to be college recruiting tactics to do more passive recruiting in the CRM space, and we wanted to adjust from there. So I'm based out of Chicago. Our company's just around 50 employees now, and it's a very exciting time to be part of Yellow.
Well, wonderful to hear that, and especially on a personal note, I would like to hear more about your success stories of how did you kick off that startup from the very beginning, and then, you know, right now you have gone through a rebranding stage, and then you kicked off Yellow_Co into a pretty good stage. So we'll get more to it. But before we get to that, why don't you tell a little bit more about, you know, your career trajectory? How did you kick off your initial career, and then how did you came up with Yellow?
Sure. So my career started, I was in college, and I was at a school in Ohio looking to move to one of the coasts. I grew up in I went to college in the late 90s. Internet was just starting to take hold. And to find jobs on the coast, it wasn't really easy. Monster.com had just come out. And so I started applying to a lot of different positions that weren't necessarily junior enough for my ranks. Ended up finding a job with Capital One as an analyst and project manager very initially. And during that process of looking for the job, I was in an entrepreneurship class at Miami University. They said, tell us your pain points. I said, I'm looking for a job, not here. And we ended up coming up with a business plan to provide software to universities to enable them to manage relationships with thousands of employers globally, along with their candidates, or their students, rather. And I got very lucky, helped a billionaire get on a plane accidentally. And by the end of the flight, he funded my first company. So my college roommate and I started a company called eCampus Recruiter way back in the day. So I started in 99-2000. Once we got funding, I left my job at Capital One. Dan left, my co-founder left his job at Black & Decker. And we started a path of both successes and failures. We got over 400 top-tier universities to subscribe to our platform. We ended up selling the business in 2008, took a little time off, and a lot of our former clients left running university career centers and started running Fortune 500 companies' campus recruiting programs. They reached out to us because there wasn't a solution that the market had offered or generated that, that met their needs, and knew that we would work really hard to provide solutions for them. And we jumped back in the ring end of 2008, which is an awesome time to start a recruiting business when the world was falling off with Lehman Brothers and a lot of other housing bubble fun activities. So we were able to spend some time really honing in on the product, not worrying about too many customers because we couldn't get them. People weren't hiring. And since then, since the market's picked back up, we've now grown it to well over 100 enterprises that rely on us for all of their global relationships. Many of them are campus focused, but a lot are now diversity, military, professional, and executive. So that's why I've got the seat where I am today.
Wonderful. Well, you started your career as an analyst and then kicked off eCampus Recruiter about decades ago, that is about 2000 or so. And then here you are as an entrepreneur, as a leader at Yellow_Co. So tell us about a time when you really failed, miserably failed.
So I've never failed, which is really cool. but you know what, I'll make
that
up.
That is very rare,
so,
right?
It is. It is. I've messed up once. No. I think one of the things that drives me, so I'm a two-time entrepreneur now here in Chicago, and one mm-hmm. of the things that I love about Silicon Valley is how they embrace failure. And I don't know necessarily that that's always looked at outside of that unique ecosphere. In my opinion, and this is part of our values, is that failures just need to be learned from. And that's how you are able to grow as a person. That's how you're able to grow as a business. And I think if you're not failing consistently at certain areas, you're not trying hard enough. So experimentation is good, and failure, as long as you fail fast and quickly, those are things that I think are actually really good attributes of failure. In my career, I've failed way more than I've succeeded, but with each failure, I think there are learnings that come from it, and I've taken it. One of the key reasons why we built Yellow the way we did was based off of a lot of learning lessons that we had with eCampus Recruiter. We didn't know how to build a sales team. We didn't know how to build a business, for that matter. And when we got clients on initially when we were selling to universities, I still remember the very first schools. It was Central Piedmont Community College. It was Friends University in Kansas. It was Samford in Birmingham, not Stanford. And I wouldn't necessarily say that was like a full-blown failure, but we really should not have gone after those particular institutions initially, because then it made it even harder for us to get into NYU or Yale or University of Illinois. With our current business, we started out with the biggest companies in the world. Many of them were Fortune 50, and so it made it a lot easier. We also, I would say in our first business, we really missed the boat on how the world was changing from job boards to social. And it was something that we saw that was coming, but we didn't think we could make a difference quickly enough with the relationships that we already had with the colleges and with FERPA laws that we just kind of overlooked it. And, you know, I look at that as say, all right, well, that was a miss. But with miss comes, you know, future opportunities. And I think it's really important to, again, we embrace failure in the organization as long as there are learnings from it. And it's applied to the next the next task and the next experiment.
So from your thoughts, that a few quotes that I've captured right now and I've learned right now is, the mantra for failure, or for the, let's say, put it the other way, the mantra for success is you fail fast, or probably fail smart enough to, you know, overcome that failure and then find out your own way to success, right?
Yeah, it's extremely important. If you were looking at being very safe, safety
let's
is not a,
safe.
A good thing. No. There are a lot of very big companies that play it very safe and end up getting devoured by very hungry people that are trying lots of different things. So I think as long as you're being transparent with your organization, your reports, your investors, your clients, then they should embrace you taking risks as long as they're calculated ones.
I know. Some organizations, they're out there emphasizing on perfection, be perfect and do it right at the first time, and then they fail miserably. So as a CEO, tell us how important it is to talk about failure and why every CEO should encourage failure at work.
Yeah, so I think it's, you know, similar to the response before. I think talking about it and being open that as a CEO, I'm definitely the least from perfect in our organization, and I will make the most mistakes, and that's okay. And so we'll talk about different things that we did. We have these town hall meetings every quarter that I present, very similar to what we present to the board. So, again, transparency, very important to the organization. Wasn't something we were always very transparent on early on. Not that our employees, we didn't trust them or we didn't deserve it. We just didn't have enough time to build those presentations. Now we have more people that can assist us. So during those times, every single employee can ask any single question they want. We'll answer it verbatim. And we'll talk about the successes we've had. We'll also talk about you know, other opportunities where we tried something and it didn't work out. And again, I think that's really if you don't talk about it, then it becomes taboo. And again, there are going to be certain times where failure is not an option. And we'll make sure that it's something where this will work perfectly on this date at this time for this group or this company. But to get there, you have to try a lot of things. And so there's going to be little failures along the way that will then lead to an ultimate success.
I know. That's what my next question is. You cannot just fail every time. It's not like, yeah, we encourage failure. You be free to make mistakes, and then we can overcome it. But there should be a fine line between failure and success, right?
Well, so people who know me well know that I'm very, very forgiving of a single mistake, of a single failure. I completely, I am on board with that. Where my tolerance disappears is when that mistake happens a second time, or that the mistake went in vain. So I think we're all trying to get to, you know, a better place, whether that's more responsibility, more more reports, more sales, more customer, whatever those are, and again, failure is going to be a part of that to get up there, but doesn't mean that you need to drown your sorrows in it, and I think it's important to celebrate all the successes because you know there's We don't live very long, and the success becomes a really important definition of who we end up being.
Correct. So talking about successes or celebrating successes, how often in an organization that you would recommend that we should celebrate success? Is it like should we wait for the year end to come, like our old school performance appraisal, or should it be done right then and there?
So this would be my opinion on it. I'm even though I'm not officially a millennial, I still feel like I'm part of it. If I do something well, I like to be told or recognized quickly. So at Yellow, what we do is we have weekly meetings, and for the entire company, and each of the team leaders they'll talk about. Some of the big things that were done over that week, recognizing the employees that contributed to it. There was a person who I actually hired out of school, who's an engineer that got promoted to a team lead yesterday. That I went right up, gave him a high five, and sent a very big congratulatory email on it. My excitement for him and for what it means for our company. So. If there's a new sale that comes in, the gong gets hit, and I think it, when there's a lull for a different time period, people want to hear the gong again. They want to receive that congratulatory note, and so I'm not one that likes to wait for things.
Wonderful. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the mistakes, the standard mistakes that people normally make during a startup stage. What could be some of the standard mistakes that people can avoid during that initial startup phase of an organization?
This is only a 45-minute conversation, correct? Because this would be
yes,
right, a lifetime conversation. I think there's a number of things that are important. And I would start with, why did you actually start this company? And I, as an entrepreneur, I'm someone that is like fully on board with go try it, make sure you're doing what you want to do. And I think there are too many people that start companies because they feel that they want to be their own boss. And I'll get that question of all the time of like, what's it like? You have direct reports, you're not reporting up into anyone. And I think the biggest mistake is you're always reporting into someone. In my case, now I've got a board, we've got investors, but in reality, I report to every single one of our customers, and especially our very big customers. And I report to them, more than, even if you worked at a large company or a mid-sized company and you have some responsibility. So I think the first thing is just really understanding what you want to get yourself into and why. The second thing is I think you have to be a little bit crazy. I think you have to feel like you can change the world, and this is the way that you're going to do it. And when you change the world, ultimately success will find you, but it might not be monetary success. And so the third item is I would never recommend anyone go into entrepreneurship for money. It will ultimately lead in disappointment, no matter how crazy successful you are. If you look at the amount of what they call unicorns now versus the number of people that are starting businesses, it's a very, very small number. And it often, those overnight successes often take 7, 10, 12, 15 years of and nonstop work. So I think if people are looking at entrepreneurship in one of those mindsets, ultimately they're going to be disappointed. That would be kind of my get-go. If you find out that you really do want to change the world, you are a little bit crazy enough to figure out that it's going to be good, and you don't really care. Obviously, you want to make a living, but you don't care if you're not doing everything that your friends are. or other sacrifices that you have to make to get there, then I think you should fully get on board and do it, and talk to a lot of people that aren't your friends or family to get ideas of the best way to succeed.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this question that normally everybody would be having. I mean, people who would like to kick off a startup would be having this kind of question in their mind. Let's take, they might be having two areas. One, they are pretty damn good at doing that job. And two, when it comes to monetizing, that can be a, great deal. But he or she doesn't like to do that anymore. So in that case, what do you recommend they do?
So this would be the case where someone is very good at something but not enjoying it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so from an they need to get used to it. From an entrepreneurship standpoint, there are lots of things that I do. I honestly absolutely love what I do, and I would I'd be hard-pressed to tell you that there's another environment that I could thrive better in. Mm-hmm. That said, there are things I do on a daily basis that I don't enjoy doing, but it's part of my job. It's helping out my team. It's taking client calls at midnight. It's traveling to different parts of the world that you don't necessarily have time to do. That's just part of life. And I think the key to entrepreneurship is you need to be good at almost everything very quickly. To scale your company, you then need to learn who the people are that are great, make sure that they have the tools and resources to be successful in their areas, and then change your mindset of, well, I used to be good at this, but now I need to be great at building a company, not building products, not generating sales. It's great at building company. And so I think that's where Ben Horowitz writes in the book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things, your job description at a startup that's growing changes every 3 months. And so I think that's more true as a founder than any other role.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are almost halfway through right now. Let's do a quick revisit and give a shout-out to our audience. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Jason Weingarten. He is the CEO and co-founder of Yellow_Co. So check them out on Twitter at Yellow_Co. And we are talking more about some of his success stories and how did he kick off his startup organization. And we're going to talk more about campus recruiting in the next 30 minutes. So tune in, and if you have any questions, hit the hashtag DTHR, and we will be able to pull that up. So Jason, well, we haven't talked more about campus recruiting because that's where your expertise is all about. So we wanted to grab that knowledge of you to our audience. So tell us, what are you seeing in campus recruitment industry? How can we make it a little more simple and easier to digest and easier to connect the talent with the organization?
So we're seeing a dramatic change right now in campus recruiting, and there have been several of these. But I think what's really interesting is if you look at just the overall globalization that's occurred, especially over the last decade or two, and how we've gone from, especially here in the U.S. as a manufacturing economy to a knowledge-based economy, the differentiation between someone who can provide incredible insights for your organization for someone who can just be average, that is it's just incredible, the changes that have occurred. And so what you're finding is where typically it would be professional services that would lead the charge in building these incredible pipelines for knowledge workers in their industry, So whether it's accounting or legal, where they have these great, really robust campus recruiting programs. Now it's technology. It is banking. It is consumer packaged goods. I mean, all of these groups are now investing heavily in building pipelines because one extra engineer is going to could make or break a lot of the different projects that they might be working on or opportunities that they can invest in. And you'll even find companies that get purchased now simply for engineering talent, not even the products that they have or their customers. So we're seeing a huge focus on this. The other kind of global changing dynamic is you have a lot of baby boomer engineers that were supposed to retire back in 2007, 2008, 2009 with the recession that ended those retiring dreams and people ended up staying on longer. And we're now starting to see the effects of the baby boomers that are leaving their jobs at very, very large organizations. So companies are starting to look at engaging students not from campus career fairs their senior year, but they are getting on campus, they are meeting with professors, they are helping students move in freshman year, mm-hmm. and they are putting them into their own talent communities. So a lot of our customers will use mobile apps. They'll meet students at a variety of different events. They'll collect all the information, and then they'll engage with them over several years prior to them, even being able to contribute to the organization. So I think we've seen some really, really big shifts in that area. The other area that we've seen a huge shift is where an internship has gone from an experience that allows a company to get some value out of that employee during that time period, whether it's 3 months or 6 months. It's really turning more into a showcase of why this would be a great company to work for your career. And I think that's internship dollars have been going up and up, and it's really seen as a recruiting source now, whereas 10, 15 years ago at many companies it was, we have a project, here's the project that I'd like to get done, and I'm going to use that project. So I think it's we're starting to see a change there, and it's something we think we've helped do by providing tools to these companies.
Mm-hmm. And I guess some of the companies are hiring these interns after their internship as a full-time employee too. Once they finish their education, they can come back and then do a full-time job if they have any openings in that company, because they already know the culture. The employer also already know the ability and capability of the student, the intern. So that works pretty well. So,
biggest metrics that we're finding now in college recruiting is intern conversion rate. Mm-hmm. So if you do not have a high intern conversion rate, then the amount of money you're spending for that program has just disappeared, and you're basically training people that are going to work for your competition. So intern conversion rate has been a metric that our companies follow heavily.
That's great. So who is doing well? Which organizations? We talked about a varieties of industries that have come up to the campus recruitment field. But still, if you are looking at your own clients or probably even outside of your organization, who does it well?
I think it's in a very exciting time. There are companies that we've worked with for several years that they've had processes down for decades in recruiting. I take a look at some companies like Ernst & Young, Microsoft, Johnson & Johnson. They needed no assistance in campus recruiting. They built programs that have hired many of their, if not all of their future leaders. What we do is we just make it much more efficient and give them access to the information much quicker than if they were doing it on their own. What is really exciting to us are companies that are just starting to get, campus recruiting is starting to become a big focus. So we have companies that have never had campus recruiting programs ever, and this is the first time they're doing it. There's a company in Texas, Direct Energy. They've been very not the largest company in the world, but it's someone that they just wanted to start building out a program. And it's cool to see a one-person show with a couple extra people, you know, side resources helping out here and there, that they actually have a really effective campus recruiting program, and they were kind of able to go from 0 to 60 in less than one recruitment season. So those are the things that I find really exciting. And the key isn't the amount of money that they put in. The key is, do you have that leader at your company that will be able to sell succession planning? If they can do that, then they will be able to say, well, if we're going to do succession planning, we need to get the best talent early, and we need to train them up. And those are the companies that they never have problems finding funds for campus recruiting.
That's true. Who else don't want to hear about the career development programs within the organization, right? So, Jason, if you kind of talk about campus recruitment, let's say decades ago or probably 15 years ago, it's like you talk to a university or probably university talk to the employer, and then employer coming in and then do a mass campus recruitment program. There will be a hell lot of companies under one roof, candidates walking in and out. Probably they might find one or two candidates who are pretty good on their resume, but later they would find out which is going to be a good fit or not. But right now, we have social media, we have technology to do virtual interviews as well. So tell our audience about Yellow_Co. What kind of services do you normally offer? How do you make campus recruitment simpler?
Sure. So I think it's it's really interesting. The Career Center has evolved dramatically over the past decade. And they went from when I first started out back in the late 90s, I remember going to my Career Center, and they had it looked like an encyclopedia, and it was just put together posts of faxes that were sent by employers for job postings. I look at that thinking, like my grandfather would tell me, it was a nickel for milk. So like that was only 15 years ago. This wasn't that long ago. And I think Dan and I helped change that focus to be more digital, where the Career Center could now facilitate relationships. They could handle logistics for employers and for the students. And what we're finding today is that logistics and engagement are differentiators for companies. And they want to reach out to the students when they would like to provide the messaging that's appropriate, and to give the white glove service that that their companies are really known for. And so they don't want to have to rely on someone who's not an employee to schedule an interview. So the tools that we provide really enable a company to have an incredible campus program, to reach out directly to candidates, to be able to have it all in a single ecosystem without having to rely on specific deadlines or specific rules that are arbitrary and have been set up more for reporting capture at the university level than what I would say is what's truly needed is making sure that the students know what the options are, making sure that they have quick, easy access to connect with the right people, and ultimately get a job and become a successful part of society, and then give back. So I think the tools that we offer, whether it's video interviewing, whether it's the ability to capture candidates at hackathons or career mm-hmm. fairs, if it's just capturing people in talent communities and then making sure they're getting the right content back to them to make a wise decision, those are the tool sets that our companies rely for Yellow on.
That's great. That's great to hear. So, Jason, we have about 9 minutes left at this point, and I really, really want to ask you this question. Tell me about a decision that you regret now. I mean, a career decision that I regret?
Yeah. Wow, that's a big one. I don't know that I have a career decision that I regret. I think because I've been an entrepreneur the entire time, so mm-hmm. and I don't regret that at all. And I'm very fortunate to that I had the means to kind of get started, and I would say there's a lot of hustle involved to get to where I am today. But I would say, from a regret, I think, very early on, I was very fortunate to get an investment from a single billionaire to get our company started. And what I didn't realize is that it's probably more important to have a variety of people to get insights and information from than, more of just that single source. So I kind of looked at a single person and just said, what are your takes on this? What are your takes on this? And I got, awesome insights, but just from one perspective. And so I would say it's more of an entrepreneur's dilemma of too much information versus, just trusting a single source. And if I had to do it over again, I probably would have gotten myself more involved in the Chicago community because there's lots of very successful people that are willing to give advice. And I probably would have built a stronger board of advisors earlier with my first business. So that's an area that I think it would have helped me grow personally quicker.
That's great. And I know you said about your hustle. So the next question would be, how much of planning, or let's say how much of hustle that you had to do in order to get to where you are right now?
Is there a number? I guess the number would be more. So, I think from my perspective, there's working harder is a real, I think it's a differentiator over your first few years. Working smarter then allows you to scale. And so during your first few years where you're getting started up, I mean, you have to fly to places that you don't necessarily want to go at any hour, at any cost. It's something that I remember working a couple days straight on less than an hour or two of sleep. It's just something that you have to do. And I think what it does is it sets a couple stages for your team, for your employees. It shows that you're willing to do anything that it takes to make this work, and you are willing to sacrifice lots of things to be successful. And I think it sets a really good tone from there. For your customers, I'm a vendor right now, but I also I consume a lot. So anytime I see someone that's working really hard, that's a partner of ours or someone that provides a service, and I know they'll work hard for it, I'm more likely to be loyal to them. And so I think hard work and hustle, I really think that gets you through those first phases of getting revenue and getting started and getting your first few hires. But then everyone wants structure, and they want smart communications and simplified processes, and I think that's where there's that big shift from a startup to a growth stage company.
It feels great to hear that you are saying working harder does matter a lot, because the whole world talks about it's not about working hard, it's about how smart you can work, right? So thank you for that. Thank you so much for that. And what should be the next question? We haven't talked anything about weaknesses, right? Because weaknesses and failure is almost like twins, if I can say.
Mm-hmm.
And then your organization is into a lot of mentoring as well when it comes to candidates and then campus recruitment. So we always talk about or ask this question during an interview. Hey, tell us about probably one of your stories about failure. So if you're a candidate, or if you're asking that same question to a candidate, how should they respond? Should they respond without showing any red flags and make it more positive, or should they literally be talking about their failures?
I always like the Michael Scott from The Office version of, I work too hard, I try too much, I care too much. Now, I think, honest and transparent is really important in interviewing, and I look at it less as the candidate's going to get a job somewhere. So
correct.
Don't worry about, you know, an individual interview and if you answered a question right. You're going to get a job somewhere. I think the key is for the candidate is to get the job at the place that you actually want to work at for a long time, not just 2 to 3 years. And so I think if you are open and honest with the recruiter, with the hiring manager, with you know, whoever else you're speaking to there, you're going to be much happier. Because if you are trying to put yourself as a stronger candidate than you actually are, you're going to go into the organization and you're going to drown. If you are – I focus on honesty. I think the way that I would phrase the answer that I would like to hear would be a risk that was taken, an understanding of why they thought that risk was worthwhile, what they learned from it, how they tracked that failure, and what were the next steps, and how did they try to address that later. So, tactically, that's how I'd like to see that type of answer is just well thought through.
Well, that's wonderful, Jason, and thank you so much again for joining with us at Drive Through HR. This 45 minutes have been an amazing, it's like a motivational conversation that we had right now, and it was so happy to hear all of your success stories and your entrepreneurial skills and. Thank you so much again for joining with us. So where can our audience find and connect with Yellow_Co and find more details about what you do and connect with you?
Well, first and foremost, my pleasure. Great to be on the show, and happy to contribute. So to find more about Yellow, just go to yello.co. So it's yellow.co. We're also on Twitter at yellow_co. We're on LinkedIn. We're on Instagram. So kind of all the different places. But to find most information, again, yellow.co will get you to the right place.
Wonderful. So, ladies and gentlemen, check it out on Twitter at yellow_co. Yellow is Y-E-L-L-O, which is actually
it's
really
a better
great.
Way to
I
say
mean,
hello.
That name. I know, right? Because I always, first of all, whenever I heard yellow.com, oh, it's like hello. That's nice.
Exactly.
So
when we decided to do a name change, we looked at something that was a little bit more fun. And anytime you're engaging with someone, oftentimes you'll pick up the phone and say yellow. So
cool.
We went with
yeah.
it. We thought it was, and you got to look at the under. It's actually an H that was flipped over. Very very money.
Uh huh. Oh wow, that's really creative. Well, again, thank you so much for joining with us. Yellow back here. So we will have you back again on the show sometime soon, and have a wonderful rest of the day.
Thank you very much.
All right, folks, so tune in to Drive to HR tomorrow, and we're going to talk more about failures and stories with another guest. So till then, bye-bye.